So good to see you tonight on a very rainy day. The service tonight, before we go to prayer, has three parts to it. And I want to start with the part that comes last, and that is that we have Brother Dan, Dr. Dan, and Betty Dahlhausen, who've just returned from Zambia with a medical team, and they're going to give us just a little bit of a report on that. We all prayed with them about that and thought it would be good if they took a few minutes and told us about it. Probably the core of what we'll do tonight will be some work with our catechism. I mentioned that to you on the Lord's Day evening, that we needed to do that, and so we'll spend a little time with that. But the first thing that I want to do this evening is begin with the program last night by our homeschoolers, and to express appreciation again to them and to all of those who helped them, helped groom them, get them ready so that they could have such an effective ministry with us. And it truly was a very powerful thing. We had, some of you I know were not able to be here, but we had a lot of people in here. And the effect of that program, there was just a gentle, encouraging, strengthening of faith in that program. And you probably know, even if you weren't here, that it was on the life of Gladys Aylward, a British parlor maid who felt the Lord's direction to her to really go out by faith without any stipulated support all the way to China and serve the Lord there. And as I was sitting back here listening to it, I mentioned this last night, one thing that occurred to me is watching our young people and just sensing their spirit and their demeanor, that it really is a tremendous fulfillment over the years to see our parents and our church hold up the right kinds of examples to our young people, so that they come to really think of the Lord's service as the greatest possible thing, whether you're doing that as a lay person in the business world or whether you're out on the mission field, that you're doing it not because it was the comfortable default, but because you really were directed by the Lord to give your life to do what you're doing and use your gifts in that way for Him. And I'm so grateful for that culture within our church. I know you are too. But the other thing that did occur to me is that coming on the heels of the Vincent situation that we were informed about on the Lord's Day evening, I think providentially that was really of the Lord for us, the program last night. And what I mean by that is this. We all, if you have any spiritual sensitivity at all, you really enter into the biographies of people of the past who launched out by faith, followed the Lord, and it really makes for dramatic reading, and in a play like we saw last night, for really, really encouraging viewing and hearing. I'd like to ask the men to bring the PowerPoint up. Last year, during the COVID, and really going right into this year, this has been a very challenging time for all of the Lord's people. That isn't just true in our church. It's right true across the board for churches and people. And your faith, I know individually, has been tested this last year, and perhaps in some ways that none of the rest of us really know about, but in many respects it may have had some connection with our circumstances and the fact that we were not meeting as frequently. Many of our ministries were not in operation. Very difficult time. Very difficult time for pastors when you listen to pastors talk and hear their anxieties about keeping their people together and people not wandering off and drifting and losing their faithfulness. These are very, very real pressures in a ministry. It takes years and years and years to build up a really dedicated, committed, sacrificing congregation. And in this COVID year, I think probably every church, at least every pastor that I've talked with, most missionaries have suffered some depletion. And so there are real matters of faith for everyone. And it was in May of last year that a book came to my attention. I may have known about it before, I'm not sure, but for some reason it came to my attention. I can't remember what was behind it. But it was this title, and I ordered it from a used book service and began to read it. And immediately I just was fixated on it. It's one of those kind of books that every once in a while you hesitate to keep reading and you don't want to read quickly because you don't want it to come to an end. And this is the story of Henry Frost, who was the first North American director for the China Inland Mission. And you can see it's entitled By Faith, and that's the whole story of this man's life, him, his story, and his wife's story. And I would read a little bit of it, and it was a great blessing. But you know, reading these biographies, you're probably aware of this, for Christians can be a kind of a spectator sport. You're vicariously enjoying their trials and just hanging, you know, on with expectancy to see how this next story is going to turn out. And we sometimes aren't aware that the Lord directs our attention to books like this, to people's lives, to a presentation like we had last night, because He's trying to minister to us too. And again in reading this book, I would come across anecdotes or quotations, and they would be very timely for me. And I shared a few of those in the pastoral letters last year, and maybe a couple in sermons as well. I'm sure I did have to really restrain myself while I was reading it not to be using illustrations from it nearly every week. But on the second to the last page of that book is a quotation, and there is no author given, credit given to it, but the writer, who was Hudson Taylor's daughter-in-law, said that Hudson Taylor would often quote this. I thought it would be good for us tonight. God nothing does nor suffers to be done. Just think of that for a moment. God nothing does nor suffers to be done, but thou wouldst do the same. Couldst thou but see through all the event of things as well as He. Now that's a profound insight. And of course, what it does is encompass our understanding of the providence of God and the way things all turn out for God's people in God's providence. And folks, what I wanted to do tonight here at the beginning is call our attention to the fact that Pastor Vincent and his family are taking a huge step of faith. It's not quite like Gladys Aylward going all the way around the globe by train without any promised support, but it's a great, great step of faith for this whole family. And for the little church up there in Cincinnati as well. And I think many of you realized that almost immediately as Pastor Vincent was relating this to us this last Lord's Day evening. But have we stopped to consider that this is a test of our faith too? We also have been handed something that God wants to see what we're going to do with. And are we going to believe that just like we're believing and trusting that God is going to provide for this dear family and for that church, that He will provide for us? Or are we going to fail this test, either as a church or fail it individually? Well, of course we're not going to fail it. God is going to help us here. But I want to set that before us tonight because last night as I'm listening, that's what's being ministered to me. I'm sitting right back there in the last pew where the Pearsons are sitting, Linda and I, and these are the thoughts that are going through my mind. I needed this program. I need to not fail the test here of my own personal faith. And that needs to be true of our church as well. And when you look back, the Lord has really been preparing us for this kind of a test. You think, for instance, of our paragraph, our verses that we've chosen for this year, Philippians 4, 4 through 9. And right at the heart of that are these verses. Be anxious for what? Nothing. Let's say it together, I'm going to quote King James, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep or guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Now that passage was chosen long before I and maybe even Pastor Vincent knew anything about this situation. You think of the emphasis of the Sunday school right now, the providence of that, on ministering to one another. And the challenge that's out there for every one of us to turn from being dependent to being a supporter and a strength of somebody else in their weakness. That undoubtedly was providential for our church. And when you think of the psalm cluster we've just been dealing with, Lord, don't let me come to shame. Pastor Vincent and his family in that church up there don't want to come to shame with this venture of faith. And not in the sense of personal embarrassment, but in the sense of having trusted God and then everything falls apart in the name of the Lord and venturing out on faith, it's all given a black eye. And we don't want to come to shame. So, folks, the Lord, unbeknownst to us, has been providing for us already and ministering to us the things that we need to apply. And it's no good to just read our Bibles and read these stories and take in the sermon series and memorize verses. And it's all up here and we don't get it right down into the nitty-gritty of what we're dealing with right now and recognizes this was from the Lord for us. And if we will approach it that way, then God's name will be glorified and there'll be great victory. Now, what I'd like to do is shift gears here and take you to our Trilogy theology. And I mentioned on the Lord's Day evening that I was looking for a word or a way to capture what I think it would be real good for us to be doing. And Brother Labadorf suggested cultivation, and several other people afterwards suggested that same word to me. It's a good word. But I want to show you this little video. This is the little tree that we had out in front of our auditorium during this series. Thank you. Very good. I think it was Jeremy Moffat who made that up for us, and that was Josh Moy and John Bixby, and I think Brother Phil Stair who provided that tree for us. And I think David Rogers was on the front end of that. I'm not sure as well in some of that. But that video was taken last year when they... Am I right? Last year, at the end of the year, Brother Phil? When was it moved like that? Do you remember?
I don't remember. October, maybe?
Okay. In the fall. And that's what kind of tree again?
It is a sugar maple.
Very good. And it sat out in front of our building all that time that we were getting the catechism in place. And then they transplanted that. And it's up here on the little hillside on the other side of the parking lot. And somebody made that video and sent it to me, so it's just been sitting in a file waiting. Felt like this was the opportune time because that's what we're trying to do. We went all the way through the catechism, and now we're, you know, in essence trying to get it rooted and grounded, or get ourselves rooted and grounded in it, however you want to look at it. So how are we going to do that? Do you need to see that video again? You do or you don't? Yes? How many want to see it again? You don't like that video. Because you know this is going somewhere. Okay. Well, I'll show it again to you another time. This is how we're going to do this. We're going to let these young ladies be our guide. This is the Catechism Accountability Club. And I've been talking to these girls since I put this up here, and they're still smiling. Even though maybe I kind of embarrassed them by putting this up because this was a couple of years ago. But we're going to have our own Catechism Accountability Club. How do you feel about that? This is how you should feel about that. Like, exclamation point, okay? So, yeah, we're gonna work a little bit on this, and we're going to spend some time with it tonight. What I want to do is begin one card back from the three cards that we have on the worship guide this week. And the reason that I think we need to do that is because this is a pair. The question of what is the state of sin into which we are all conceived and born, and the card that follows is... what is the state of misery into which we are all conceived and born? The state of sin and the state of misery into which we're all conceived and born. And folks, these truths, this catechism like this, this is not remote from our lives. It is these doctrinal truths that our lives are rooted in. And these are the realities. And when anybody, including Christian people, when they begin to make decisions and when they are forgetful of the realities, then what they're doing is venturing out on a rope of sand. And it won't be long before, won't be many years go by, and they will realize that they're giving themselves to contemporary values, contemporary ambitions, the American dream, that it will prove just as God said, it's vanity. These are the realities. When we wonder what's going on in our marriages that's problematic, when we wonder what's going on in our child rearing that's problematic, or our response to our parents or in other relationships, or what's happening to churches and so on, these are the realities. There's a state of sin into which everybody is born. There is misery connected with it. It consists in these things. And it's keeping these things in mind and applying those things in your thinking on a daily level that helps you understand if what you're doing or the approach you're taking isn't an approach that has in it the possibilities of dealing rightly with these things, then your approach is doomed. You have to take into account the realities. So, for instance, You're a young parent and the Lord's giving you children. These are the realities. These are your children. They're not different than anybody else's children in the nursery. They were born in this state. And these are the things that you will have to have an approach that can get at the root of these things, or you have no possibility with your family. So let's work with this first card. What is the state of sin into which we are all conceived and born? Let's read it together. The state of sin into which we are all conceived and born consists in the guilt of Adam's first sin, the lack of original righteousness, the corruption of our whole nature, commonly called original sin, and the actual transgressions which proceed from it. Let's just take that apart. The state of sin into which we're all conceived and born consists in, what was the first thing? The guilt of Adam's first sin. What's the chapter in the Bible in which you have that stated? Romans, in what chapter? 5 and the 12th verse. Now, the average person out there will never accept that. And there are some Christians that are very confused about it, but that's true. The state of sin includes this, first of all, the guilt of Adam's first sin. Okay? So we've got that. You got that. What's the next thing? The lack of something. Lack of what? Original righteousness. What is meant by original righteousness? What's meant by the word original? Somebody help us with that. Okay, what that has to do with, it has to do with our origin. In our very conception, we lack righteousness, the lack of original righteousness. We have none. All right, thirdly, the corruption of our whole nature, commonly called original sin. It isn't just that we don't have righteousness, we don't have any original righteousness, it's this on the other hand. Original sin, sin with our origin. We're not neutral when we're born. Nobody's a blank slate. They come wired up in the DNA, corrupted from the very second of conception. And then thirdly, and this is how it works out in life then, and all the actual transgressions which proceed from it. And you think of your parenting and your children, and the transgressions start to show themselves. But you want to remember, that's way down the line. Trace it back. It is the lack of original righteousness, the corruption of your child's whole nature. And now, the actual transgressions. And if you think that you can lick this with your children by just somehow disciplining and overcoming the transgressions, that what a faulty foundation on which you're beginning your child training. God is going to have to do something at the root of our children. And it's His law, and in a right way and in a loving way with our children, making them aware of why they have such difficulty doing right, why they find it nearly impossible to obey with a good spirit. It's as they come along and you're explaining these things to them, and you're doing it with compassion, not with a condemnation in your spirit, with compassion in your spirit, your heart moved over your child, like you know God's heart is moved over you in your sinfulness. That awakens their conscience, and the Spirit of God uses that, and by God's grace, our children finally come to realize, I have got to have the Savior. And they come to Christ. All right, let's try this again. Let's see what we can do with this. You think you can say this? Well, I'm having a hard time even finding the question. What is the state of sin into which we are all conceived and born? Let's see if we can say it. What is the state of sin into which we're all conceived and born? The state of sin into which we're all conceived and born consists in the guilt of Adam's first transgression, first sin, the lack of original righteousness, the corruption of our whole nature, commonly called what? Original sin, and all transgressions which proceed from it. Okay, maybe we ought to do that one more time. Let's go back and do it one more time. What is the state of sin into which we're all conceived and born? The state of sin into which we're all conceived and born consists in the guilt of Adam's first sin, the lack of original righteousness, and okay, so you got four things there. Now, we'll stop with this one because for the sake of time, let's compare that with the issue of the misery of being in that state. What is the state of misery into which we're all conceived and born? Okay, let's read it together. The state of misery into which we're all conceived and born consists in lost communion with God, life under His wrath and curse, and liability to all miseries in this life, death itself, and the pains of hell forever. And remember the three L's. We talked about those this last Lord's Day evening. Lost, communion with God, life under His wrath and curse, liability. Those will help you. We've got three things there, and the third thing has three elements to it. Miseries in this life, death itself, which is inevitable, pains of hell forever. Okay? Let's see what we can do with that. The state of misery into which we're all conceived and born consists in, what's the first one? Lost what? Communion with God. That's a misery. Okay, following that, what's next? That's a misery. And most of the world doesn't even know that the wrath of God abides on them. But that's the source of a lot of their misery. And thirdly, third L, and liability to all miseries in this life, and then at the end of your life, death itself, and then pains of hell forever. Let's see if we can say that whole thing. Ready? Here we go. The state of misery into which we're all conceived and born consists in lost communion with God, life under His wrath and curse, and liability to all miseries in this life, death itself, and the pains of hell forever. Okay, and you just think of being able to have that, or at least some of that, at your fingertips. When you think about yourself, when you think about those you love, when you think about lost people that you try to give a word of witness to, all those things. And may the Lord help us to make good use of them.